What's the difference between journey and trip? What's the best way to travel around the British Isles by car? We've got six amazing drives you could do this summer in the UK and some advice on where to stay. Welcome to
Aprender Inglés con Resi Craig.
Hello, I'm Craig.
And I'm Reza.
And with over 45 years of teaching English between us, Reza and I are going to help you improve your English and take it to the next level. Hello, mate.
How's it going, Craig?
Very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing well. Can't complain.
Good. Guess what? We've got a voice message from Isabel Chanmoro, who asks us about the difference between the words journey and trip. So let's listen to Isabel's message.
Hi, Reza and Craig. My name is Isabel, and I'm from Andalusia, but I live in Madrid. I've been listening to your podcasts since 2006. I love them. You're very good teachers. Well, I sent this voicemail because I have a doubt. I don't understand very well the difference of the meaning between journey and trip. I've been looking for on the internet and the result, it's a bit confusing, at least for me. Both meanings are the same in Spanish, viaje. So I don't understand the difference and when do we have to use journey or trip. Please, can you explain us that in a simple way? Thank you very much for teaching us so well your lovely language. It's a pleasure listening to you every fortnight. Thanks again. Bye.
Oh, thanks very much for your message, Isabel. You've been listening to us since 2006. We haven't been podcasting that long, have we?
No, I don't think so. 2013?
I think that's when we started, but I was doing some audio files and interviews for La Mansión del Inglés before we started together. So maybe Isabel is a student of the website La Mansión del Inglés at mansioningles.com, and that's where she heard my voice previously. So thanks for listening, Isabel. Thanks for your question. One word I did like that you used is fortnight, F-O-R-T-N-I-G-H-T. Isabel said every fortnight, which means every 2 weeks. That's not a common word in the US, I understand. They don't have that word over there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, they often say bi-weekly, which confuses me because I would say bi-monthly, meaning twice a month.
Yeah.
But an American would say, yeah, it's a bi-weekly podcast. It's every 2 weeks.
But even more commonly than that, I would say fortnightly, to be honest.
We would because we're British, but they wouldn't over there. They don't have it in the US, and I find that really interesting. Anyway, journey and trip. Well, journey is trayecto, distance, usually. So you could say, for example, the journey from Madrid to Valencia by a train takes about 2 hours. In that example, you wouldn't say trip, would you, really? No. You wouldn't say the trip from Madrid. You'd say the journey.
And you're interested trayecto. In the distance or the trajectory, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Are there any other uses of journey?
Yes, if I said to you, we went on a journey around South America. Journey in the sense of, in Spanish you would say travesía, so a long journey. A lot of traveling is involved. Maybe it took us 3 weeks, 4 weeks, a month, 2 months. You know, there's a famous old film, I think it's from the 60s, called Journey to the Center of the Earth.
I remember it.
Remember that? Journey to the Center of the Earth. You couldn't say trip. It just doesn't sound right. Trip to the center? No, it's too light. Trip sounds too light. To get to the center of the earth, that's going to be hard work. That's a journey.
So there's a lot more involved in a journey than a trip. A lot more traveling. Very often, although not always, a lot more time. It could be a lot more time and perhaps a longer distance. Trip is the common word for viaje, though. For example, I'm going on a trip to Stockholm next week, or my neighbour has gone on a business trip. So business trip, collocate, they go together. And I'm going on a trip could be for 2 days, it could be for 6 months. Mm-hmm. Do you agree with that?
Yeah. So Isabel, we hope we've helped you. The difference is not 100% clear cut, but we hope we've given you a better idea.
Yeah. So try to think of collocation. It's a long journey from Valencia to Portugal, for example. But I'm going on a trip next week to Paris on holiday. One important thing to mention with trip and journey is don't use travel in this sense as a countable noun. A common mistake I often hear from Spanish speakers is I'm going on a travel. No, don't say that. I'm going on a trip or I'm going on a really long journey.
But there is a noun travel, Craig. When can we use the noun travel?
Usually, well, very rarely, because it's more often used as a verb. You could say Gulliver's travels, for example.
Right.
Or tell me about your travels to India.
So plural, yeah?
Usually yeah. Plural. It's usually a plural noun, but it's more common as a verb. I like traveling. I often travel in the summer.
Or travel broadens the mind, perhaps you sometimes hear. So sometimes used as a noun, but when you're not counting a specific journey or trip, then maybe travel, right?
Yeah. Haven't we come a long way on our podcasting journey?
Yeah, we certainly have.
Next, we have an email from Manuel from Patana. Reza, do you fancy reading it?
Yes, Manuel, nice to hear from you again. He writes, "Hello, friends. This is Manuel from Paterna again. I would like to ask you for one or more pieces of advice about traveling around." He wrote British Island. I think you mean the British Isles. That's I-S-L-E-S, the British Isles. Especially Ireland. I am thinking about it, so it will be welcome, your comments. He means your comments would be welcome. I have been not long ago in Malta. He means I was in Malta recently. And I've got a little experience driving on the left and speaking a little English. My speaking is so bad.
I'm sure it's not.
I'm sure it's better than you think, Manuel. But this experience encourages me and my wife to travel around your islands by car. I would like to drive around all the seacoast of Ireland. I don't know why, he says.
Why not?
Why not? But it's an idea that is in my mind. If you think there are other places better to visit, please tell us. Okay, Manuel, good question. Can I give you one tip straight away? My first tip is never say the British Isles in Ireland.
Why not?
Your English is quite correct, but it's a very contentious issue in Ireland. A lot of Irish people don't like the expression the British Isles. Some people don't mind, but some people object to it. It's a political thing. It reminds some people of the old colonial days. So in the Republic of Ireland particularly, I would advise you not to say the British Isles. Say Britain and Ireland. It's much, much safer. You avoid controversy that way.
So you should say either Ireland, meaning the Republic of Ireland, or Northern Ireland.
Yeah. Or if you want to say Britain and Ireland. But saying the British Isles, that it's the idea that somehow the other island belongs to Britain, which bothers people in the Republic of Ireland.
It's colonialism.
Although all over the world, people use that expression. I mean, the French, the Spanish have that expression, but it's only actually in Ireland where it's a little bit polemic, a little bit controversial.
A little bit touchy. T-O-U-C-H-Y, touchy, a bit sensitive. Anyway, Manuel's email got me thinking, oh, by the way, I did once travel down the west coast of Ireland. Definitely recommend it. It was a wonderful, wonderful trip. I did some camping. I stayed in some bed and breakfast houses. Beautiful countryside, lovely people, very relaxing, very pretty, very beautiful. You're not guaranteed great weather, obviously, even in August, which is when I went, and it rained quite a lot. But that's the reason why Ireland is so green and so beautiful, because it's always raining. So bear that in mind. Remember that. And I would definitely recommend driving specifically down the west coast of Ireland. You'll have a lovely, lovely time.
I second Craig's advice. I agree with it. And since you'll be on the west coast, you should, while you're there, visit the cliffs of Moher, which are on the west coast of Ireland, which are the highest cliffs in Europe and well worth a visit. Did you go there, Craig?
No, I didn't. I didn't go there. Yes, I did. I did go there. I did go there, but it was a very foggy, misty day. So we were very disappointed that we got to the cliffs and we had no view. And we were standing there feeling sad and it started raining. And suddenly the clouds parted. The clouds moved. The sun came out for 2 minutes, which was long enough for us to take the photographs, look at the view. And then it clouded over again, which means it got dark and grey. And that was stayed that way for the rest of the day. So we saw a beautiful view for 2 minutes and took the photo. So we did speak about holidays and travel back in episode 156. Go there if you want to brush up on your holiday and travel vocabulary. To brush up means to refresh yourself, to revise. And thinking about Manuel's email got me thinking of great places you could drive this summer around the UK. Now, there are links in the show notes at inglespodcast.com/164 from the Telegraph website with Britain's 20 greatest drives, fantastic places to drive in the UK. And if you go there and check that out, have a look, most of the recommendations are for Scotland and the north of the UK. So that's one resource for you if you're thinking of a driving holiday this summer. Also, I found 6 best UK road trips on the Rough Guides website. So I'd like to speak about those a little with Reza, and hopefully there'll be suggestions for you if you're thinking of travelling around the UK this summer. So you may have heard of Rough Guides, that's R-O-U-G-H, and you can find the link on the website for episode 164. Number one is up in Scotland. They recommend Scotland's North Coast 500, and it's a 4 to 7 day trip. Now, it's best for getting away from city life, urban life, traffic jams, noise, pollution, that kind of thing. And you travel around the Highlands, you see Highland cows and stags. Stags are ciervos in Spanish, and travel around Scotland. Have you ever done that, Reza?
I didn't get quite as far as the north coast, but I did drive around the Scottish Highlands. I got as far north as Ullapool, and it was beautiful. I remember eating fish and chips beside the port in Ullapool, and porpoises were jumping out of the water.
Wow.
It was amazing.
How long did you go for?
I was in Scotland for about a week, so just driving around. And I remember when I first saw a baby Highland cow, I thought it was a little bear.
Because they're very woolly, aren't they?
They're very woolly, very fluffy, and I'd never seen one before. I thought it was like a little bear. Until I realized it was a little baby cow. They look quite different to other cows. They're very wild and savage looking.
With short legs, very short legs. Stumpy legs. Yeah. Where did you sleep when you went? Did you sleep in hotels? I don't think there are many hotels in the Highlands.
There aren't many, no. There are a few, but not many. I stayed in B&Bs and bed and breakfast guest houses, and they were all great. Surprisingly, I wasn't expecting it, but quite a few of the hosts, the people who run these B&Bs, were English, in fact.
Yeah.
I think quite a lot of English people who like the countryside retire to Scotland and earn a living having guests in their guest houses.
Do you remember approximately how much you paid for bed and breakfast?
Roughly? I can't remember exactly. We're talking now about 10 or 15, more like 15 years ago. But I know it wasn't expensive. It was always good value, particularly if you ate a hearty breakfast.
A hearty breakfast?
Hearty, very filling. So I would have like porridge, very typical Scottish thing to have. Porridge, which is gachas de avena, warm oats, milk.
That's very filling, isn't it?
That's already filling. And then after that, I would have a fried breakfast as well as the porridge.
So that's the whole thing, yeah? The bacon, sausages, fried tomatoes, eggs, everything.
All of it, yeah. And I usually didn't need any lunch. I didn't eat again till about 5 o'clock because that filled me up enough to go walking for about 15 miles. Very good value.
Number two on Rough Guide's list is Yorkshire. In the north of England, a circuit through Yorkshire's finest. And this kind of drive and touring is best for ale drinkers and cheese lovers.
What's ale?
Ale is a fairly strong dark beer. So when you think of beer, you might think of lager, things like Heineken, Carlsberg, Budweiser, that kind of thing. But ale tends to be not so gassy, darker. I think you say tostada in this part of Spain, and quite often brewed locally or made locally. So if you like your strong local dark beer and your cheese, then drive around Yorkshire. It's a 3-day trip, and it's definitely on my list because although I've been to the Highlands, I've never been to Yorkshire, and I really, really want to go.
You mentioned cheese, Craig. Would one of those cheeses be Wensleydale?
That's a very famous cheese from Yorkshire, isn't it?
Yeah.
Wensleydale cheese.
Wensleydale. It sounds like it's from Yorkshire. I think it is because we talk about the Yorkshire Dales.
Mm-hmm.
So Wensleydale, I'm sure it must be a dale, which is what, like a valley, is it, in Yorkshire?
Yes.
Hills and valleys are the dales, yeah.
And of course, not very far from Yorkshire, you've got the Lake District in the east of the country. So you could combine driving around the lakes and staying in lovely bed and breakfast houses with a Yorkshire trip to see the lovely villages and a bit of cheese and some great beer.
I wonder, would that trip include, it probably does, some of the what they call the Bronte country, that countryside where the Bronte sisters set a lot of their novels, like Wuthering Heights and that type of thing. They're all set in the Yorkshire Dales, in the countryside in Yorkshire, very wildly beautiful.
Very possibly. And my feeling is when you start driving around and you're speaking, practicing your English with people who have these bed and breakfast places, then they will be helping you to find tourist attractions and directing you to national parks and places of interest. So, yes, of course, you need to plan your trip or follow the guide on this website. But of course, as you're traveling, if you have the time, you could also go and visit some places of interest in the area. Number three, down in the southwest of England, England's Atlantic Highway. Now, this is good if you're into surfing. To be into something means to like it very much. So, surfers and wannabe hippies. What do you understand by a wannabe hippie?
Well, if you're a wannabe something, that means you would like to be. So maybe you're not quite, but you'd like to be, like a wannabe rock star. You're not a rock star, but you'd like to be. So wannabe hippie is someone who'd like to be a hippie, but they're not a real hippie.
Yeah. So that's a 4 to 5 day trip. And if you're into surfing and you see yourself as a hippie, that could be a trip for you.
I think I've probably driven down that road. We're talking about the road which goes through Cornwall.
Yes.
Yep. I've been through there a couple of times.
Because you visited there recently. Last couple of years.
A couple of years ago I visited. I wonder if some of our older listeners remember Becky, who lives there and has appeared on the podcast.
She has.
Yeah. And she has brought me down that road a few times and I've seen people surfing. And yes, a lot of kind of hippie types around.
And what did you think of that part of England?
Beautiful. Definitely worth a visit. For me, it's the most beautiful part of England that I know, although I don't know Yorkshire and stuff, but it's the most beautiful part I've seen, I have to say.
I'll let you take number four because this is your neck of the woods. If something's your neck of the woods, it means it's your area, your neighbourhood, something you know well.
Well, according to the Rough Guide 6 Best Road Trips, they include the County Antrim coastal route in Northern Ireland. And yes, I would definitely agree with that. It's a great place, they say, for story lovers and stargazers, people who like to look at the stars, people who are interested in looking up on a nice clear day and getting a good picture of the stars. I suppose that's because there's not too much pollution there. You're quite far away from city life, so it's easy to get a good view. They recommend taking 3 to 5 days, and yes, I wouldn't argue with that. Although it can be done in a day if you're in a rush. If you're based in Belfast, you can go right up the coast, stay there for an hour or two, and then come back down again and sleep in Belfast. It is possible. It can be done if you want to do it the quick way. I never get bored of it, Craig. Every time I visit Ireland, if I'm there for, let's say, at least a week, I do that drive. I love it.
It'd be great to do that with you one day. I'd have to make it over there and we'll have to find some time to drive that. Are there places, if you do the slow trip, 3 or 5 days, are there places to stay on the way? Bed and breakfasts?
Yep, plenty of bed and breakfasts. And Northern Ireland's got to be one of the cheapest parts of the UK, I'd say, to stay for bed and breakfast. Yep. One of the really interesting things about doing that drive is, if you are lucky, and you do need to be lucky and get some clear weather, you can actually see across the Irish Sea to the coast of Scotland. So you can actually be in Ireland and be looking at Scotland without a telescope, just with the naked eye.
It's quite far as well.
It's about 15 miles or something like that. But if you get a clear day, you can just make out the Scottish coast on the other side.
Right.
Which is nice. You can be looking at it while you're in Ireland.
Number 5, back to Scotland, the road to the Isles of Scotland. So this is very good for historians, anybody interested in the history of Scotland, and also fans of Harry Potter, fans of Daniel Radcliffe, Emma Watson, J.K. Rowling. They have all stayed at a super luxury castle called Inverlochy Castle up there in Scotland. And this is a recommended trip for 2 to 3 days.
So when you see that train, the old steam train in the Harry Potter films, supposedly on its way to
Hogwarts,
actually it was filmed in that part of Scotland. Mm-hmm. And there are roads which follow near to that railway line. That's the roads we're talking about.
You're a Harry Potter fan, are you?
I'm not really, but I just happen to know that that's where it was filmed. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I know that roads go more or less parallel to the railway track.
And I definitely know the scenery up there is beautiful, absolutely breathtaking. Last one we've got on the list, number 6, over to Wales. We haven't visited Wales yet. So you can chase Welsh dragons over the Black Mountain Pass. Now, if you are a Top Gear fan, and I am, the motoring program, Top Gear, this is a great road to drive. Now, it's only a day, although you could extend your trip and then stay to look at the Brecon Beacons, which is a mountainous, hilly area. And you could do a trip including the Brecon Beacons, which are very, very pretty. And Wales is a very attractive country with great scenery. It's very green, of course, lovely villages, and another well-recommended drive over in Wales.
Craig, do you know, I've never been to Wales.
I went to the Brecon Beacons when I was 15 years old with a school trip for a week. And we did typical things that kids do of that age on school trips, climbing and going into caves and camping and trekking. And it's beautiful. It's a lovely, lovely place. Very remote. Not many people. And it's a very relaxing, pretty area to explore.
I must visit very soon. Can I add an extra tip, Craig, one which is not on the list?
Go ahead.
Because I have a feeling that we might have some listeners who are big fans of Game of Thrones, since
it is
a very popular TV series. Well, there's a place which is also in County Antrim, like the coastal route, but this one is not on the coast, it's in the interior. It's a place called Dark Hedges, near a little town called Ballymoney. And it's a very atmospheric road. It's a must-see if you're a Game of Thrones fan, because they've shot quite a few of the famous scenes there. I've included a couple of pictures as links in the show notes for this episode, 164. So you can have a look and you'll see just how atmospheric it is. It's got these dark hedges or trees. A hedge is like a line of bushes along the edge of a road, which kind of close up over the top of the road, making it look like it's sealed in. And it gives a very atmospheric feel to the place.
It sounds lovely. It sounds beautiful. So we hope we've given you some ideas with these different destinations. If you're thinking of practicing your English this summer and going over to the UK, there's some ideas here for Wales, Ireland, Northern Ireland, Scotland and the north of the UK. Accommodation. Well, we spoke about accommodation vocabulary back in episode 156. So that's englespodcast.com/156 for vocabulary. But I've also put some links here for places where you could find accommodation to stay while you're driving. So we've got TripAdvisor, which you may know, Airbnb, we've spoken about that before. There's a very nice website called bedandbreakfasts.co.uk. Obviously, lots of private houses that offer bed and breakfast in different parts of the UK, so you can plan your trip and reserve your bed and breakfast place. And another one I liked, bedandbreakfastnationwide.com. So go to the website to find those links. And of course, go to the tourist offices once you're driving around the UK.
Can I strongly recommend that you use TripAdvisor, because you'll be able to do two things. Well, no, three things at the same time. First, read it to get some ideas. Although, don't believe every single word you read, of course, but get some ideas. Secondly, after you stay, write something. And by writing something, you'll be doing two things. One, you'll be practicing your English in real life. And thirdly, you'll be having an effect, because you get to praise, say good things, a place which you really liked. Or if you feel you've been treated badly, you get to warn others.
That's so a very, very good idea.
Practice your English and you have a real effect on real life.
Very good idea. But please take these reviews on websites like TripAdvisor and Hotels.com with a pinch of salt. With a pinch of salt means take them in context. Don't be too influenced. I remember looking at 99 or 100 positive reviews and then seeing one review from one person who happened to say there was no toilet paper in the room or something like that. And said, oh no, I can't go there. I can't go to this bed and breakfast. There's no toilet paper. So you really have to be very careful with these reviews and obviously take them with a pinch of salt.
Take them with a pinch of salt means be prepared to read exaggerated reports. Craig, don't you think the opposite happens as well? I've read reviews and I thought, why do I have the feeling the manager's written this himself? It didn't sound like a real person. They're basically saying everything about this place is superb. I can't fault anything at all. So I'm going to list every single thing which this hotel does really well. It's like, would anybody bother to do that except the manager? I kind of find it hard to believe that it's a real person sometimes.
I think with a bit of experience, you can notice the false reviews because they do stand out, sobresalen. You do notice when it's not a real, true, honest review. And of course, the more reviews there are, the less chance they're all going to be false. So you have to read a lot, spend some time, do your research before you go. If you need some help while you are traveling, to remind you that we have a course called Mansion Travel on the Mansion English website. It costs €8.50. And if you are working in the hotel and restaurant industry this year in the UK or in Spain or anywhere where you need English, we have some help for you with Inglés de Hostelería y Restauración. That costs €3.99. So if you'd like to visit our store, which you can find at store.mansioninglés.net, I'm sure you'll find a product that will help you with your English this summer. Speaking of help with English, Reza, what's italki?
I told
you. We haven't mentioned them before, have we?
Craig, iTalki, as some of our listeners may already know,
they may do,
is a service online for you to get in touch with native speakers to improve your English. So if it's online, as you can imagine, it's extremely convenient because you will choose when you want to have classes. Not only that, but you will choose who you have your class with, and you'll also choose how much you're going to pay, because you look at the profile of the available teachers for the language you want to learn, that's English in your case, or maybe another language, maybe French and Italian as well, I don't know. And you decide on their experience and their curriculum and how much they're charging, which teacher you're going to try. Try various teachers until you get the one who's right for you. What's more, if you go to englishpodcast.com/italki, that's I-T-A-L-K-I. iTalki will give you $10 of credits to get you started to buy your first lesson so you can get your first lesson for free. We think iTalki is a good place for you to get classes online. Give it a go. We'd like to say thank you to iTalki for sponsoring Aprender Inglés con Resi Craig.
Thanks, iTalki. We've got a few, one or two useful expressions that you could use while you're traveling around practicing your English this summer. And these are some things that you may need when you're staying in a bed and breakfast, hotel, hostel, wherever. Something that I often find myself asking, is breakfast included? Because sometimes I forget, especially with hotels. I make a reservation, I go to the hotel. Sometimes it's included, sometimes it's not included. So is breakfast included in the price? Would be one question you could ask. Anything else connected to meals, Rosa?
You need to know what time you can eat. So you could ask, what time is breakfast served? Or what time is dinner served? Or what time is lunch served? Or what time are meals served?
There's nothing worse than going down at 10 o'clock for breakfast and it's closed and you've missed it and you're hungry. Some hotels give you only one key card, but you're traveling with your wife or husband or girlfriend or friend or boyfriend or somebody else and you need two. So can we have another key card, please? Or could we? Could we have another key card, please? Just asking for another key card to get into your room.
Another very important expression that you'll need to know is, what's the Wi-Fi password? That's Wi-Fi, not Wi-Fi, by the way. In English, we pronounce it Wi-Fi. This is very important because you will, of course, be listening to Aprender Inglés con Resi Craig while you're abroad. So you need to have a Wi-Fi connection for that.
Sin duda. Sometimes things are not working in the room. Maybe the air conditioning, the TV, or the Wi-Fi, or the, how do you say caja fuerte in English?
The safe.
The safe. Maybe the safe is locked. You can't open it. So you phone to reception. Hello, I'm sorry, the aircon isn't working. Hello, excuse me, the TV isn't working. The Wi-Fi in my room isn't working. Or I can't open the safe. So the electronic safe isn't working. Could you send someone to fix it, please? Or would you mind sending someone to fix it? Remember, with would you mind, you need the gerund. Would you mind sending? Would you mind opening? Would you mind coming? Would you mind helping me? Would you mind plus gerund?
Another important thing is where you can park your car if you're driving. So you could ask politely something like, could you tell me if there is free parking available? This, could you tell me, is a nice polite way, an indirect question. If you want to revise indirect questions, asking things politely, you could go back to episode 50, where we had our little interview and class with Nicola. Do you remember Nicola?
Yeah, that was a very useful lesson. We've had many positive comments on that lesson with Nicola. We looked at indirect questions with expressions like, could you tell me, can you tell me, or I was wondering if you could, or I'd like to know. Those polite expressions that mean you need to change the order and there's some grammar rules involved. So if you want to revise that, episode 50, englishpodcast.com/50 with Nicola.
Craig, are you going away this year?
I hope to go away this year just for a few days to Stockholm, because I've never been there. So I'm really keen to get to know Stockholm and see the city. And I have a friend there who's also a podcaster. So I hope to be speaking to him about microphones and other stuff, if he's listening. Hi, Danny. So hopefully, yeah, I'll be going there. I'm not sure about the rest of the year. Very much depends on family and their health and how things are with my parents. So we'll see. I hope so. What about you?
Well, in late July or August, I'm sure I'll end up in Ireland for a while. And after that, I don't know. I'd like to go somewhere else as well for a week, but I haven't decided.
In August, yeah?
August, yeah. I'm giving it some thought. I haven't decided yet. I'll let you know when I make a decision.
Let the listeners know. I'm sure they're interested. When you travel, do you have any preferred forms of transport? If you had to choose between a boat, a car, a plane, or a train, do you have any preference?
Definitely the most comfortable is train, in my opinion.
I agree.
Although, if you're going a very long distance, it might be a bit slow compared to a plane, but it's the most comfortable.
Do you like driving?
Not particularly, no. Not long journeys, no. What about you?
Not on motorways. So the kind of trips we were talking about earlier around the UK sound very, very attractive to me. To hire a car or even take my own car and do touring in quiet country roads really, really appeals to me. I love that idea, and stopping when I want to and enjoying the scenery.
Yeah. Plenty of stops. Yeah.
Driving on motorways bores me to tears. If something bores you to tears, it really, really bores you. So I hate the idea of spending hours and hours on a boring motorway.
And I presume that would be even worse if you were on your own.
Yes, unless you're listening to Aprender Inglés con Resi Craig in the car, it would be a nightmare. Do you enjoy traveling alone? Is that something you like to do?
I do, not driving though. But being on a train on my own, for example, from time to time is quite nice. I've done that a few times. Mm-hmm. Craig, where in the world would you most like to visit?
On my own or?
What, either on your own or accompanied?
I do fancy traveling around Central America or South America as well. I have never been to Mexico. I'd like to visit Mexico. We've got friends there now and friends in Costa Rica who have been in touch through the podcast. I'd like to see, I was speaking to someone from Panama recently. That sounds like a really interesting a place. Hello, Leanne, if you're listening. And also Asia. And I'd like to do it alone. I'd like to travel alone because I think you meet more people, you're more open to experiences. You can reflect on things. There's more introspection when you're traveling alone. And it's a completely different trip. So maybe at some time in the future.
I'd quite like to travel on my own, particularly to Costa Rica. And hello to all our listeners in Costa Rica, because I'm obsessed with the idea of meeting a Costa Rican sloth. Un pedazo Costa Rican, said. I'm really obsessed with the idea. I really want to meet one of those creatures.
And having some pineapple while you're there.
Yeah, with the sloth. Craig, what's the best type of holiday for you? A touring holiday, moving around, or staying in one place?
I have to say, again, it depends. If I'm going to Ireland, for example, then it would be a touring holiday. If I'm going to Canada, to the Rockies, it would be moving around and seeing as much as possible. But when I go to Stockholm, I'm only going for a few days. I want to stay in the city. I don't want to leave the city because I want to get to know it. I want to walk around it. I want to get a feel for it, because I think when you stay in one place a long time, you really get a feel for how people live day to day and what their life is like. So it really depends where I go.
And what's the best holiday you've ever had?
Oh, I've had quite a few excellent holidays. The three that stand out to me, sobresalen, I have to say New Zealand. It's a beautiful country. It's a shame it's so far. And also I love Japan. and I had a fantastic time in Argentina. So those are three countries that I would love to revisit at some point. And yours?
It's quite hard to pick a favorite. I really enjoyed the Scottish Highlands, the Scottish countryside in general. It's very beautiful, and you get a lot of space to yourself. It's weird because the UK is one of the most densely populated countries in the European Union. Into that small space, they managed to squeeze about 65 million people.
Mm-hmm.
But bizarrely, Scotland, specifically Scotland, is one of the least densely populated places in the European Union, even though it's part of the UK. So you can see the extreme difference between London and the southeast compared to Scotland. They're very, very different places.
And that surprises me because it's so beautiful. It's breathtakingly beautiful. And when you go to Scotland and you see the views and the highlands, it mesmerizes you. It really does have an effect if you enjoy a scenery and that kind of thing. What about Cuba? You enjoyed that trip?
That was a very interesting trip, yeah. There were good and bad things about Cuba. It's a country with a very particular history and social situation. So therefore, you could see that there were some difficulties about daily life in Cuba and some things perhaps that need to be improved there.
I think it is improving, though.
It is improving. But I was just amazed how comfortable it was considering the difficulties they had. It could be a lot worse. You know, I certainly felt that it was completely safe. That's one thing I remember about Cuba. Very, very, very safe.
Yep.
Indeed.
What about cruises? Touring from one port to another on a boat or a ship. Does that appeal to you? Do you fancy that?
Not really. What about you?
Again, depends where. I don't fancy Mediterranean cruises. That sounds boring. But maybe around Scandinavia or up to the Arctic Circle or the Antarctic. I mean, those extreme places that you have to take a boat to get to. The north of Russia, for example, would be amazing to cruise around. But the popular package tour cruises around resorts and the Mediterranean, it doesn't appeal to me, no.
Yeah, I agree with what you say. And my friend Becky, she's done a tour of the Arctic Circle. And
she loves cruises.
She loves cruises in general. But that one particularly impressed me, the pictures she sent me. But I must admit, just the idea of being obliged to be surrounded by lots of people on a boat, that doesn't appeal to me. On a yacht with a group of friends cruising around there, that would be brilliant. But a big, big cruise ship with lots of people, no, doesn't appeal to me.
Me neither. Reza, have you got any childhood heroes that you'd like to share with the audience?
Yes. In fact, I've put in a video clip to a childhood hero of mine who permanently toured around North America. I think he was based in Canada, but he also went to the USA as well. And he was just an amazing free spirit. And he stopped only to help people in trouble. He was such an altruistic character. So if you're interested to know who that mystery traveler is, click on the link in these episode notes. This is 164. And you'll see who my childhood traveling hero is.
So you're not going to tell people who it is. You're asking them to go there to find out.
Yeah. If they're interested, they got to click on the link.
Is it someone I might be familiar with?
I think you probably know.
It's not Mickey Mouse, then?
It's not Mickey Mouse, I promise.
Okay. So inglespodcast.com/164 to find out Reza's childhood hero. And now it's your turn to practice your English. Do you have a question for us? An idea for a future episode, or perhaps you'd just like to tell us about your best or worst holiday. We'd love to hear your feedback. Send us a voice message and tell us what you think. Go to speakpipe.com/inglespodcast or send us an email with a comment or a question to me, Craig@inglespodcast.com.
Or to me, Reza, that's belfastreza@gmail.com.
And we are now at 42% towards our goal of 100%, $100 per month to pay for all of our transcriptions of all our episodes. If you'd like to support us, you're welcome to go to patreon.com/inglespodcast. And we'd like to take a moment to thank our lovely sponsors who are
Nicole, Anna, Pedro, Manuel, Maite, Lara, Maria, Sara, Carlos, Zara, Mamen, Juan, Corey Finnerin, Marielle,
Jorge, Raúl, Rafael, Manuel Tarazona, Agus, Manuel Velázquez, Néstor, and Juan Carlos, our new sponsor.
And we also want to thank Arminda from Madrid, Roberto from Granada, and Angelica Bello from Madrid, who are continuing to transcribe full transcriptions for us in their own time and with their love. Thank you very much for doing this. So far, Alberto has transcribed episodes 132 and 133. We now have four transcriptions going from 131 to 142, and Angelica has just finished episode 1. Thanks very much.
Thanks to all of you.
What's on next week's episode, Reza?
On next week's episode, chemistry vocabulary.
Something that neither of us know anything about. Possibly the shortest podcast we'll ever do. We look forward to this.
Let's hope it doesn't blow up in our face.
Yeah, I think we're going to get a good formula together for next week's podcast. So look forward to speaking to you next week. Until then, it's goodbye from Reza.
And goodbye from Craig.
The music in this podcast is by Pitts. The track is called See You Later.